Okay, so imagine this. You're working on a contract and your client is like this amazing app developer, right? And they're licensing their their super cool new software to one of the big tech companies. And they're going to get a cut of every subscription. So it's a royalty deal. All the payment terms are spelled out, audit rights, all the fine print is there. But what if the tech company, they start getting a little shady with the subscriber numbers? Like, what can your client actually do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's exactly why what we're diving into today is so important. Wolf v. Superior Court, it's this California case from 2003. And it gets this super tricky question of like, when does a profit-sharing agreement become something more than just, a contract? Like, when could it actually create a fiduciary duty between the parties?
Yes, exactly. Because you guys will see pretty quickly as you move through law school that there's a huge difference between, someone just owing your client money based on a contract versus, having a fiduciary duty to act in their best interest.
Oh, absolutely.
And to really get into this, we're looking at a story you guys might actually recognize, the whole royalty dispute around Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
So Gary Wolf, the author of Who Censored Roger Rabbit, he made this deal with Disney. And he got, a fixed fee plus 5% of all the gross receipts from the movie.
Right. Sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you would think, right? But it turned into this whole legal battle.
Yeah, it definitely did. Things got messy. So let's go back to 1983. So Gary Wolf, he licenses his Roger Rabbit characters to Disney, and the contract lays it all out. The payment, that initial sum plus the 5% of all the gross revenue. And importantly, the agreement also said that Wolf could audit Disney's books.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, he could check the financial records and make sure everything was,
Yeah.
Reported correctly.
So he had that kind of safety net built in, right? He could audit.
Exactly. And that's going to be important later on. But fast forward a bit, and Wolf starts getting suspicious. He thinks Disney might not be playing totally fair with the money stuff.
Nope.
He tries to, use his audit rights, but Disney's allegedly not cooperating, like dragging their feet, not giving him the documents he needs. And he's thinking they're underreporting the revenue and obviously underpaying him on his royalties.
Okay, so that's when things really heat up.
Exactly. This is where the big legal fight starts. Wolf sues Disney, and his lawsuit has two main parts. One, breach of contract, saying they didn't pay the right royalties and blocked his audits. And the second part, which is really what we're focusing on today, is breach of fiduciary duty.
Okay.
So his argument was that because Disney had total control over all the money stuff, all of the financials for this huge Roger Rabbit franchise, they automatically had a fiduciary duty to him.
Right. Because they controlled everything.
Exactly.
Okay, so what did the court say about that?
Well, the trial court, they looked at this fiduciary duty claim and they basically dismissed it. They did something called a demurrer.
Okay.
So they were essentially saying, even if everything Wolf said is true, it still doesn't legally add up to a fiduciary duty. And they didn't even let him like amend his complaint to try and add more details.
All right.
Oh, wow, they shut it down.
Yeah, they did. And Wolf wasn't happy about that. So he appealed to the California Court of Appeal.
Okay, makes sense. So that's where things get really interesting for us.
Yeah, this is where we get to the heart of the legal issue. Does this situation where, Disney controls the finances and have to pay Wolf this percentage of the profits, does that automatically mean there's a fiduciary relationship?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Right. And what did the Court of Appeal say? Did they side with Wolf?
Whoa.
Did they say the control equals fiduciary duty?
What happened?
So it's not that simple. The court actually ended up siding with Disney on this key point.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said that just because Wolf was entitled to a cut of the profits and had that audit right from the contract, those things alone weren't enough to say, boom, there's a fiduciary duty. They said there usually needs to be something more, some evidence of a joint venture or some kind of relationship built on trust that goes beyond just a regular contract.
Okay, so let's break down why they decided that. What were their main arguments?
Sure. So their first big point was that the agreement between Wolf and Disney was what they called an arm's length business transaction, meaning Wolf owned the Roger Rabbit characters and he licensed those rights to Disney.
Right. It's not like they were partners from the start.
Exactly. They weren't creating Roger Rabbit together from day one.
Yeah.
It was more like a standard business deal, two separate entities, each looking out for their own interests.
So even though one person's getting paid based on how the other person's doing financially, that doesn't mean it's automatically a fiduciary relationship.
Exactly. And their second point was about the money itself. So even when you have a debt that's calculated as, a percentage of the profits, it's still just a debt.
Okay.
It doesn't automatically turn into like a trust situation where someone's managing assets for someone else's benefit.
Right. It's not like Disney was holding on to Wolf's money or something.
Right. The obligation to pay, whether it's a fixed amount or a percentage that comes from the contract itself.
Okay. Now, what about that audit right that Wolf had in the contract? He was arguing that, you know, that shows he was relying on Disney to do the accounting properly.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the court did address that directly. They said that the audit right was just a specific part of the contract, a way for Wolf to check and make sure he was being paid the right amount based on what they agreed to.
Right.
It wasn't proof that there was already some kind of fiduciary duty. It was more like a tool to make sure Disney was sticking to the contract.
That makes sense. So he had a way to check the numbers, even if he was saying that Disney was making it hard to do that.
Right.
But what about the fact that it would be really difficult for Wolf to prove that Disney was underreporting the revenue, especially if they were hiding records?
Right.
Like, didn't the court think that was a reason to say there should be a fiduciary duty?
Yeah, they actually did acknowledge that it would be tough for Wolf. Hmm. They even suggested that in cases like this, where one side has all the financial info, it might make sense to shift the burden of proof in the lawsuit.
Hmm.
Meaning Disney would have to prove they were reporting the money correctly instead of Wolf having to prove they were doing it wrong. But the court was very careful to say that shifting the burden of proof, which is about the evidence, is different from saying there's a fiduciary duty, which is about the whole nature of the relationship.
Okay, so that's a really subtle but important difference, right? Just because it's hard to prove your case doesn't automatically mean the other side has a fiduciary duty to you.
Exactly. And to make that point even clearer, the court gave a hypothetical example. They said, what if Wolf and Disney had worked together on like merchandise deals, you know, sharing decisions and responsibilities beyond just the initial character licensing?
Right.
That might suggest a different type of relationship, maybe even a joint venture. But in this case, Wolf was mostly passive. After the licensing agreement, he was basically just waiting for those royalty checks.
Okay, I get it, but wasn't there a dissenting opinion in this case?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh. Justice Johnson, he saw things differently.
Okay, how so they...
Well, his main point was that because Disney had so much control over the money side of Roger Rabbit, they should have had a fiduciary duty to Wolf.
Oh.
He said when you have this kind of profit-sharing setup, where one party has all the financial info that directly affects the other party's pay, there's a big temptation to, you know, fudge the numbers a little.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He even compared Disney to being like Wolf's accountant, basically saying that this level of financial control should automatically come with fiduciary safeguards to keep things fair and transparent.
So he was more focused on the power imbalance and the potential for Disney to take advantage of that.
Right. He thought the agreement itself, the fact that Wolf's money depended entirely on how Disney did their accounting, that created a situation where Disney had to be extra careful and honest with Wolf, you know, a responsibility that he thought was basically a fiduciary duty.
Interesting. And what did he say about the majority's argument that the difficulty of proving underpayment was just an evidence problem?
He basically said, no, it's bigger than that. When one side can completely control and potentially hide important financial info, that creates a fundamental imbalance of power. And to be fair, you need to have a fiduciary duty there. He saw that risk of Disney, you know, maybe hiding records as a major reason why fiduciary safeguards were necessary.
Okay, so we have the majority saying a contract is a contract and you have audit rights to protect yourself. And then we have the dissenting justice saying, hold on, there's a real power imbalance here and the potential for abuse when one party controls all the money.
Yeah, you've got it. That's the core of their disagreement.
Okay, so for all of us future lawyers out there, what are the key takeaways from Wolf v. Superior Court?
Well, the big one is don't assume that just because there's a percentage-based payment agreement, like a royalty, that your client automatically gets the extra protection of a fiduciary duty. You usually need more than that. You need to show there's trust or a joint effort that goes beyond just the money stuff.
So it's not a guaranteed thing.
Right. And if you're the one writing contracts, this case shows how important it is to be super clear about the relationship between the parties. Like, if you want to create a partnership where there are fiduciary duties, you need to say that very explicitly.
Right. Spell it out.
Exactly. And on the flip side, if you want to keep things strictly as a contract with no fiduciary stuff, you might want to include language that specifically says there are no fiduciary duties.
Okay. That's a good tip for drafting contracts. What about for actually litigating a case? So let's say you're representing someone in a dispute and their pay is based on the other side's performance, but the other side controls all the financial information. What's a good strategy based on this case?
Well, this case highlights the idea of trying to shift the burden of proof. Even if you can't convince the court that there's a full-on fiduciary duty, you might be able to get the court to say that the other side has to prove they're doing their accounting correctly, especially if your client can't easily access that information.
Okay, so that could be a big win.
Yeah, definitely. And thinking more broadly about fiduciary duties, mm-hmm. what's the main lesson from Wolf v. Superior Court about when these duties usually come up in business?
What should we be looking for?
The key is that fiduciary duties usually need more than just one party controlling the finances. You need those extra signs of a special relationship, like a joint venture or a relationship based on deep trust that goes beyond a typical business deal, or you know, specific legal relationships like trustee beneficiary or attorney client. The simple act of money changing hands based on one person's accounting, that's usually not enough to create a fiduciary duty.
So there needs to be something more there.
Exactly.
Okay, so to sum it all up, the big takeaway from Wolf v. Superior Court is that we need to understand the difference between what a contract gives you and what a fiduciary duty means.
Sure.
Those are two different things, especially when we're talking about agreements where someone's pay is based on future profits or revenue.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And this case really makes you think about other situations where the line between a contract and a fiduciary duty might get blurry. You know, what are the specific things that help us decide? Which is a question worth thinking about as you keep learning about the law.
Definitely a lot to ponder. And just a reminder for everyone, we talked about some important legal concepts today, like demur, fiduciary duty, and shifting the burden of proof. If any of those are still a little fuzzy, you know, maybe go back and check your notes or readings.
Good idea. And with that, we've come to the end of our deep dive into Wolf v. Superior Court.
Thanks for joining us.
Until next time, keep thinking critically about all these legal relationships.
And how they can get really complicated.
Absolutely.